This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Economic indicators that make you go, hmm.
Mixed news on jobs and retail.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, July 8th. The number of people filing jobless claims dropped last week to its lowest level since May.
Our census added jobs to the American economy, but a census taker of a different sort in the UK is getting a pink slip. And the best Bordeaux may actually be quite young. But first,
about 454,000 people lost their jobs last week and filed for unemployment benefits. That's better than was expected, but not everyone's impressed. Among them, Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago. She joins us live, as she does most Thursdays. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
Diane, jobless claims are down to their lowest level since May, but you are not happy.
No, actually, there's a couple of factors that are a problem. One is the discontinuation of unemployment insurance forced many people to stop applying for unemployment claims. So many of the reapplications dropped out of the mix, and that means they're not getting checked today. As of July 1st, some 1.3 million people no longer received unemployment insurance checks.
Also, Diane, some retail news out this morning. Stores say sales are looking surprisingly good for June. Apparently, that's partly due to the summer heat waves. People were looking for air conditioning. And it's looking like June might be the 10th month in a row that we have seen retail sales go up. But from what I understand, you are not impressed by this either.
Well, you know, the good news is we're spending. The bad news is we're spending still with heavy discounts. A lot of discounts during the Memorial Day weekend and following that led to those June sales. We also saw much warmer weather help the June sales. But on the flip side of it, big ticket spending, like spending on vehicles and homes, plummeted during the month of June as many consumers found they just couldn't get the credit to finance those kind of big ticket spending. So we saw a real trade-off. We're spending on the little things we need to replace, but not buying those big ticket items.
Diane Swonk in Chicago. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
For more on what people are buying and what they aren't buying, we turn to Marshall Cohen of the NPD Group. Hi, Marshall.
Pleasure to be here.
All right. It seems like a lot of mixed signals out of these retail numbers. What were you hoping to see?
What I was looking for in particular were how did the stores compare to last year? You know, a lot of times we look at momentum from month to month, but June has, in the last 12 years, never been better than May. So I didn't expect great numbers, but I did expect to see retailers in some cases fare much better than last year. They were up against the softest numbers during the recession. So they really needed to come in with some decent numbers this June.
How did teen retailers? Seems like we always get a lot of those, and it seems like they did pretty well this past June.
That's a really great indication of where the consumer's mindset is. You know, during the last few months, the teen retailers almost were non-existent. It's critical to get teens in the equation, and particularly now as we enter into the back-to-school period.
Yeah.
You know, kids getting mom with the wallet into the stores is very important right now.
And mom and dad, they want to save money, too, so the discounters did pretty well. Why just the discounters?
Well, the discount really is coming from two directions. One, the middle-income consumer is actually spending more robustly than the luxury and the high-end income consumer. So the discounters are faring well, and the consumer also is looking for deals. They're very calculated in their consumption right now. They're thinking twice and looking and doing all their homework and finding the best deals. So some of the department stores that have been aggressive with discounting and the outlet malls and the discount retailers all faring better than the average.
Marshall Cohen in New York. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, July 8th. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at marketplace.org. We're going to get a take on the global perspective now, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects us here in the United States. The International Monetary Fund has raised its forecast for global growth, including continued recovery in China and the U.S. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us live to talk about it. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
Sounds like good news, right?
Yes and no. Sorry to extinguish the glimmer of hope, but in a nutshell, the IMF is saying the global economy and the U.S. will grow faster than expected this year, but then growth will slow down next year. Looking at this year, the IMF has raised its global growth forecast, as you say, by a half of 1% to 4.6%. That's mainly due to vigorous growth so far in Asia and solid improvement in many of the developed economies. The U.S. has done better than expected. The IMF thinks the American economy will expand by 3.3% this year.
But what about all the bad economic reports and worries about the slowing recovery, Stephen?
Well, the IMF has taken that into account. In fact, that's why they reckon that the rate of growth will decline a little bit next year in the major economies like the U.S. And they reckon it'll even dip in China, although the growth rate there remains pretty phenomenal by our standards, almost in double digits.
And if the IMF says the recovery is going to slow down, what's the main reason? I mean, what are they talking about, this big risk?
Well, the biggest threat undoubtedly is Europe and its debt crisis. That's probably the biggest single risk. One optimistic note, though, the IMF doesn't believe the global economy will slip back into recession. Here's Dominic Swords, a lecturer in economics at the Henley Business School.
Actually, the risk of a double dip, even in individual countries like the US, like the UK, France and Germany, the double dip risk is quite low.
J.P. Morgan's chief economist says the chances of a double dip globally or in the U.S. are less than 15%.
All right. Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
BP says it can stop the oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico by the end of the month. The Wall Street Journal reports a BP official said a fix could be in place by July 27th. This morning, though, the oil giant is in expectation management mode, saying that's a best-case scenario. Joining me live to talk about all this is our own Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Nancy, a BP official told the Journal that it was trying to stop the leak by July 27th. Why July 27th?
Well, it's a pretty important day for BP, Stacey. It just so happens BP is due to report its second quarter earnings on July 27th. And it would like to have some good news for investors, wouldn't it? Now, the Journal quotes a BP official as saying that date, July 27th, is possible in a perfect world. But we all know the world is not perfect. If there were a hurricane near the spill site, the ships drilling the relief wells would have to leave temporarily, and that would be a big setback.
Assuming things were to stay on track, perfect world and all, how difficult is this maneuver? How do these relief wells actually work?
Well, they're being drilled down beneath the seafloor to the actual reservoir of oil. And the basic idea is you drill a hole, stick a pipe in, and drain out the natural gas. And that's the extent of my engineering knowledge. So I called a petroleum engineer, John Clifford Jones. He teaches engineering at the University of Aberdeen. And he says without the gas, the oil will actually stay put.
The gas is what forces the oil out of the well. And so remove the gas and the pressure which enables the oil to leak is removed.
Now, Nancy, later today, the Obama administration is going to court. It's going to try to keep the 6-month ban on deep water drilling in place. The president said that will help make sure another oil leak doesn't occur. And of course, the court is also hearing from oil companies who say a blanket drilling moratorium is too broad. Nancy, just out of curiosity, how important is that decision for the oil industry?
Well, it's important to oil companies drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, but Stacey, companies are drilling all over the world. I actually asked that engineer I talked to, John Clifford Jones, about this, and he says the oil wells in the Gulf of Mexico, believe it or not, are not actually that deep. He says there are much deeper wells off, say, the coast of Brazil, where there is no moratorium.
Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. Thank you, Nancy.
You're welcome.
Right now, Somali pirates are holding an estimated 400 people hostage, captured over the course of weeks and months. Dozens of global navies have tried to stop them, and a small number have been caught and are being tried in Africa. The BBC's Simon Cox has been looking at how the problem is being tackled and how sophisticated now the pirates have become. Hi, Simon.
Hi there.
What kind of boats are being targeted by these pirates?
Well, you're really looking at big freighters, oil tankers, things that move pretty slowly, really often. They're the ones that the pirates will target, and also they can get much bigger ransoms for them. Interestingly, we were talking to the United Nations, and they were saying that the rates for pirates have gone up from $5,000 they used to get per ship to $15,000 in just over a year. So the rewards for Somalis on a dollar a day are pretty big.
And how high tech are these pirate gangs?
They are getting more high tech. And we were talking to one of the commanders of the European Union has got a naval force down there. He's a guy called Major General Buster Howes. And he says that because Somali piracy has been established now for quite a few years, that the industry has developed around it.
You can buy shares in piracy in the markets in Somalia. The pirates who are successful are Somalis equivalent to our sort of successful footballers. They have considerable status because they're earning money and bringing money back into the community.
So, Simon, what can be done to stop these folks?
Well, there are discussions about maybe trying to go for their assets. I know the American government has issued an order which actually bans ransom payments to pirates. But it's very difficult. You know, the Somali banking system, you know, they don't send these money over wire transfers. A lot of it's obviously cash that they're getting from the ransom, so it's very hard to trace it.
The BBC's Simon Cox in London. Simon, thank you.
Thank you.
'09 might have been a bad year for the economy, but it was a very good year for Bordeaux. Wine from that region in France is selling for $1,500 a bottle, and it hasn't even been bottled yet. From London, the BBC's Rebecca Singer reports.
Wine experts generally agree that the perfect mix of a wet spring and a hot summer has made the 2009 vintage one of the best they can remember. But at more than $1,000 a bottle, who's going to buy it? Well, investors are top of the list, but according to Simon Davis from specialist wine merchant Fine and Rare, a lot of the money is coming from China and Hong Kong, where genuine wine lovers are ready to snap them up.
You know, it's nice that these wines won't necessarily be tied up in investment funds or what have you for, you know, for a decade or more. You know, it's actually quite nice to think that these are going to, admittedly, very wealthy, but very wealthy end users. You know, these are actually going to be drunk, and so they should be.
And having spent all this money, the wine isn't even ready to drink yet. It'll be bottled and stored for 10 or 20 years until the owner decides to taste it. And when they finally do get around to pulling the cork, it'll be worth a lot more than they paid. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
It has been a long and dramatic build-up, but tonight, NBA star LeBron James will take part in an hour-long TV special and finally announce whether he's staying with the Cleveland Cavaliers or moving on. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
How do you fill an hour-long special with information that only takes a few seconds to say? Maybe bring all the team owners on stage at the same time, Survivor style.
The 9 votes inside this urn are about to make one of you a millionaire. But you're going to have to wait just a little bit longer.
As long as the good stuff is saved till the end, Neil Pilson says it doesn't matter how the special is produced. He's a sports media consultant and the former president of CBS Sports.
You want to fill the hour perhaps with shots of LeBron playing as a 4-year-old and then as a 5-year-old and then as a 10-year-old and maybe a little travelogue of his hometown. Obviously, I'm being facetious here, but you have to fill the hour.
And Pilson says ESPN wouldn't be doing it if viewers didn't want it.
I'll almost guarantee you it's going to get a very large rating.
And it can't hurt that two of the teams courting LeBron, the New Jersey Nets and the New York Knicks, are in the nation's largest media market. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The private equity firm Kohlberg Kravis Roberts, better known as KKR, is taking another shot at going public. It tried it once before in 2007, but the financial crisis squashed that. The fact that it's trying again is a big deal, as Marketplace's Elisa Roth explains.
Over the years, KKR has bought up all kinds of companies. RJR Nabisco, Toys R Us, TXU, the Texas Utility. Steve Kaplan is a finance professor at the University of Chicago. He says KKR is an icon in the world of finance.
KKR really created the leverage buyout in private equity. They are the oldest name in the business, probably the best known.
Going public may be a milestone for the company. It's also a way for the co-founders Henry Kravis and George Roberts to cash in on the KKR brand and for the company to diversify. David Brophy's a finance professor at the University of Michigan. He says it's also a good sign for the economy.
One thing you should be heartened by is that this possibly indicates the return of the IPO market.
After the sale next week, the founders will own about a quarter of the company. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
President Obama visits an electrical vehicle plant in Kansas City today. Smith Electric Vehicles got $32 million in stimulus money to build zero-emission trucks. As Laura Ziegler reports, it's got some good news for the president.
Smith Electric Vehicles is one of the few manufacturers selling electric trucks to corporations. Among its clientele, Staples Office Supplies, Coca-Cola, and Frito-Lay.
But we see a strategy to get the cost competitive with traditional combustion engines.
Mike O'Connell is director of fleets for North America for Frito-Lay. Electric vehicles are still limited to a 100-mile range, but O'Connell says that's not a problem for his company.
We have engineered routes. A lot of our routes go less than 100 miles a day, so we kind of know how many miles we're going to go, how long we're going to be out there, and then when they get back to the distribution center, we have charging points. So very consistent, works well in our delivery system.
The technology is still new. Aside from their cost, batteries can emit hazardous chemicals and require electric grids most cities don't yet have. Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill visited Smith Electric this spring. She was there to announce a $22 million Department of Energy grant for research and development.
We don't have to do something different.
Right.
To get what we're
you don't
used
have to adjust.
Exactly.
That's great.
Exactly.
Senator McCaskill envisions a much wider use of electrified trucks.
It's a natural for things like the post office. This is exactly the kind of vehicle the post office needs for mail delivery. In the military, there are many delivery needs on various bases in the United States for delivery vehicles.
Executives at Smith Electric hope to up production from 2 trucks a week to 25 and double their workforce by the end of this year. In Kansas City, I'm Laura Ziegler for Marketplace.
For anyone, changing jobs can be a challenge. But how about changing careers? City officials in Grand Rapids, Michigan, hope a growing health and life science industry will replace a decimated manufacturing economy. In the second of a two-part series, reporter Jay Field says workers are facing a tough transition.
Bill Van Orden started a new job this week. He's a nurse, and it's nothing like his old job.
I was a tool and die journeyman.
Van Orden, who's 39, worked at an automotive plant for 13 years.
It stamped Ford F-150 bumpers and then also bumpers for GM.
When he got laid off 2 years ago, Van Orden decided there was no longer a future in manufacturing work. He went back to school and got a taste of nursing in an exploratory course. He learned healthcare was one of the few growing industries in Michigan and enrolled in a full-time program. Van Orden says he had a lot to learn.
I was used to not really working with people. It was more mechanical. You worked on something with tools. There was no real worry about how someone's feeling.
This lack of people skills is just one of the deficits educators are trying to address as more people look to transition from manufacturing to jobs in Grand Rapids' growing health and life sciences sector.
You might need to do some major re-education of yourself. You know, you haven't been in school for 20 years. There's a lot you have to be brought up to speed on, especially computers and technology.
Julie Parks heads up workforce training at Grand Rapids Community College. She says medical courses are hot right now.
There's been a huge growth over the last 3 years. Medical assistant is the next really big program.
Bill Van Orden says his year-long course at another nearby school was intense. He had to bone up on math and measurement skills and master a computerized patient record system. And as he learned to give patients their medications and take vital signs, Van Orden says he learned something about himself.
I really enjoy working with people. I just seeing their face when you make a connection with a patient. It's just a real good experience.
After a few more days of orientation, Van Orden will begin work as a nurse at an urgent care facility. In Grand Rapids, Michigan, I'm Jay Field for Marketplace.
And finally, if you've been trying to cut back on spending, you are in excellent company.
Queen Elizabeth II is reining in the royal budget by about 25%. Palace repairs are being delayed, servant salaries are being frozen, and the Queen might cut back her staff, which includes a royal piper and a royal swan counter.
You can't axe the royal swan counter. Who would count the swans? In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.